Turn with me now to 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We're continuing to talk about generosity in this series as we walk through now these 8th and 9th chapters. 2 Corinthians 8. You're driving down Broad Street. You come to an intersection and there's a red light and you stop. In the median, you see a guy standing there. He's wearing old clothes and he's holding a sign, and you don't want to make eye contact because you don't want to commit to anything, but you'd like to know what's on that sign. And you see it's something about a veteran. You see something about food. And then you see maybe the words, God bless you. Do you give? You're flipping channels later in the day and you see an image of a poor village somewhere in the world. And you see some children there looking desperate. And the announcer says something about the need for clean water and an appeal for money. Do you give? You sit in church on a Sunday and a plate comes across your lap and you see on a screen in front of you more ways to give about online giving. You hear about a building fund and you hear about missions. Do you give? There's something in common with those three scenarios we just considered, and it's the need for trust. Trust is huge when you decide to give an offering. Now, it's not the only big factor. Here's a big factor. Do I have any money? That's a big one. Before I can even think about giving, do I have anything? Another big factor is this. Do I care? You know, when I hear about one of these needs, am I filled with compassion to want to do something? But then comes that big factor. Do I have confidence in this offering that it's going to be handled right? So we're in a passage today that's going to remind us that we can't be careless in the ministry of giving and receiving. We're going to see that Paul and his ministry team are very, very careful with how they handle this offering they've been talking so much about. In fact, the way they handle this offering actually is going to foster trust and help in this important ministry. So remember our context here. We're talking a lot about generosity because Paul talks a lot about it here in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. In particular, there is an offering that he's collecting for poor Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. He's planting churches, he's strengthening churches, he's sharing the gospel, but all the while he's appealing to these largely Gentile churches across the Roman Empire that they would collect an offering for their brothers and sisters in Christ back in Jerusalem. That's the offering he has in view. And in these chapters, he's trying to stir the Corinthians to fulfill a promise that they made. The Corinthians had said, we're going to give generously. And Paul now is about ready to send people there to collect that offering that they promised, and he wants to make sure they follow through. So as we see this morning, we're going to be reminded that trust is critical in giving and receiving. We're going to see it in at least four directions. First of all, there has to be confidence in the recipients. There has to be confidence in the givers. There has to be confidence in the advocates for that offering. And ultimately, there has to be confidence in God. So let's look at that first one. There must be confidence in the recipients. Whenever we have an appeal to give, we need to ask the question, is the need legitimate? Is this real? Or is this some kind of a scam? It's okay to ask a question like that. Now, with this offering for the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem, nobody doubted it was real. Now, whether it was because of famine or famine plus persecution, everybody knew that's a real need. We don't find the Corinthians balking because they think there's something shady there. But understand, that has to be there when we think about giving. Do I trust that the need is real? The person receiving this, is it real? So I gave you that scenario a moment ago. Driving down Broad Street, you come to the intersection, and I asked you, do you give to the guys in the median? You might have felt guilty. You thought, Jim thinks the right answer is always yes. And I wish I said yes because I know I should give. But that's not what I was angling for. I'm going to give yes if the Holy Spirit prompts you to give. But many times the answer would be no. I'll tell you the truth. That's not where I do most of my charitable giving, driving down Staples Mill or Glenside and Broad. I mean, that's not where I do it. Very rarely would I give there. Let me tell you two reasons why. First of all, the county has placed a sign there saying, don't give to people panhandling in the median. There are other ways to get help, and they have a phone number there. It's not safe. And then the second reason is, I don't know if I can trust them. And we've all seen those exposés where they find out, they follow one of these people home, and they're doing quite well. or as a job, or they're consuming it on drugs. And so it's not always the right answer. Well, they're making an appeal, and I'm a Christian, therefore I must give in to that. It's been a number of years ago now. I was a youth intern at a church, and we were going from Memphis to Glorieta, New Mexico, to camp. And so on that journey, you have to make the fast food stop. And we stopped at one of those places. And one of the girls in the youth group said, I want to give my salad that I didn't even open. I want to give it to that man out there begging. I said, well, that's very nice, but let me go with you because we don't know him. And so we went outside there, and the guy's looking pretty rough. And he takes the salad, and to his credit, he thanked the girl for the salad. And then I engaged in conversation. And I said, man, I'm really sorry you're going through such a hard time right now in your life. He surprised me. He said, oh, things are fine. I'm not going through a hard time. I'm just backpacking across the country. That's what I'm doing right now in my life. I thought, wait a second. This man is just lazy. He's freeloading off the generosity of people like this girl in the youth group. So understand, we're not obligated to help every person who makes an appeal. In the context of laziness, Paul told the Thessalonians, if a man will not work, neither let him eat. Sometimes as a church, we get these outside appeals. We get a phone call. We get somebody drop by the office. And I can tell you, many times through the years, those needs have been real. So, and we've gladly tried to help or hand them off to our benevolence committee, our team of our deacons, and say, hey, guys, could you look into this and let our deacons decide whether or not. But sometimes it appears to us to be legitimate. And so we've helped a number of people through the years who've come in. But it's always difficult to know. I'll tell you, one of the times I thought the guy was telling the truth until this happened. A guy came. He had quite a story. And everything in me thought, this is legitimate. And then the guy said this, hey, if you want, I'll go to my car and get the documentation I've been talking about. I thought, okay. In my heart, I was thinking, I don't really need it because you've convinced me already. But I didn't say that. I just said, oh, okay. So apparently I called his bluff. Accidentally, he went to his car and drove off. There was no documentation. If you're ever interested, you could talk to Robin or Ann in the office, and they've dealt with a lot of these through the years as well. So what I'm making the point is this. In our giving and receiving, there has to be trust in the recipients. It all starts to break down if there's not trust in that direction. But not only that, there has to be trust or confidence in the givers. And this is really the context of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. Paul, again, reminding the Corinthians that they had promised to give, and now he's trying to see, will there be follow through? In chapter 8, verse 22, he does speak of confidence in the Corinthians. He's concerned that maybe they're distracted and they won't do it. Maybe they lost their zeal to give. But ultimately, he says, we're confident that you will come through. But consider this. If the Corinthians fail to follow through on what they said they would give, it would call their integrity into question as a church. And it would call Paul's integrity into question. Because Paul's been telling others about the generosity of the Corinthians. Hey, everybody, the Corinthians said they're going to give a generous offering. If they don't, Paul's going to look really bad as well. In fact, I want you to see, we're coming to chapter 8 in a moment, but look with me now, 2 Corinthians 9, verses 1 through 5. He's going to speak to what's on the line here. 2 Corinthians 9, 1. For it is superfluous for me to write to you about this ministry to the saints. For I know your readiness, of which, catch this, I boast about you to the Macedonians, namely, that Achaia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. He says this, but I sent the brethren in order that our boasting about you may not be made empty in this case, so that, as I was saying, you may be prepared. Otherwise, if any Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to speak of you, will be put to shame by this confidence. So I thought it necessary to urge the brethren that they would go on ahead to you and arrange beforehand your previously promised bountiful gift, so that the same would be ready as a bountiful gift and not affected by covetousness. Did you catch that? Paul said, Corinthians, I've been bragging on you. I've been boasting on you to other churches about what you said you were going to do for the poor brothers and sisters in Jerusalem. Many people have been inspired to give to this offering too because of what I said about you. What's notable here is he talks about those Macedonians. Remember back in early part of chapter 8 when Paul said these Macedonians gave according to their ability, beyond their ability, out of their poverty, the Macedonians were inspired to give to the poor in Jerusalem. And Paul now tells them, and part of the reasons the Macedonians wanted to give so lavishly is because you Corinthians, when they heard about what you were doing. Now imagine the shame if the Macedonians come through And they're come to Corinth and find the Corinthians really aren't going to give. They're going to question the integrity of the Corinthian church, and they're going to question Paul's integrity. We're just talking about how critical trust is in the matter of giving and receiving into ministries and God's work. It would be awkward, it would be needless shame if the Corinthians didn't come through. So let's apply this to ourselves. What if you and I stopped giving? Let's just take, for example, this building. We felt inspired to build this building, to make space for others. What if we say, we've given enough, I know we're not done yet, we're just going to stop? Would that not be a shame to us? Or what about missions? This past year, what an amazing, over-the-top, well past the goal missions gift that you and I gave. What if we said, you know, that's kind of enough? I mean, that was really excessive. We're not going to do that again. You know, that ought to hold us for several years. What if we just stopped giving to missions? What a shame that would be to us. Missionaries, if other churches did the same, missionaries would be coming off the field in droves if we just weren't trustworthy in the matter of giving. Or what if we stopped giving money to the Pregnancy Resource Center and the East End Pregnancy Center? Or we stopped funding local church plants, and if other churches did the same and they began to fold, it would be difficult. So you think about it, these ministries are counting on givers to be faithful, to step up and to pray and to continue to give. And so let me tell you this, as a church, we have this level of confidence in the givers of the church. Over and over again, the members of the church have demonstrated their dedication to be generous givers. But I want you to hear this, we don't take that for granted. It's not like we sit around and think about budgets and missions goals and go, oh, they'll give. We can just make that number as big as we want to. Nobody thinks of you that way and presumes upon you that way. In fact, do you know that we shield you from offerings? So you know about the offerings you hear about and the ones we put before you, like Johnson Elementary School, this ability to give and things like that. But do you know that regularly we have to turn down other groups who want access to you? This is how much we respect you. We don't want to overload you. We don't want to be just putting out offer and appeal. There are these strategic offerings that we have in the rhythm of the church. There are other opportunities that come up. But it's our desire not to presume upon you and overload you where you feel stretched so thin. Also notice we respect you in your giving and trust you. We're not cajoling you into giving. We're not shaming you and guilting you into giving. So we're talking about the matter of trust. Got to trust the recipients. The need is real. Got to trust the givers. But also third, there must be confidence in the advocates for the offering. We can say it this way. You have to have confidence in the ministry that's collecting the offering. And here's our context as well, that Paul is wanting to demonstrate his and his team's trustworthiness in the way they're handling the offering. Paul's using great care in the way he tells about the need. He's not using any manipulation or coercion. Tells them this is not by way of command. He's just letting them know about a dire need in Jerusalem. But he's equally careful about how this collection is going to happen. And I want you to see how encouraging this is. It's a real need, no false teaching, and we're going to be careful with it. Now, this takes us to our text. So look at 2 Corinthians 8, verses 16 through 24. Now, think about this. This is the first century, and they're using great financial accounting measures. They want to make sure nobody can question how this is being handled. I love this. Verse 16. But thanks be to God who puts the same earnestness on your behalf in the heart of Titus. For he not only accepted our appeal, but he himself, being very earnest, he has gone to you of his own accord. We have sent along with him the brother whose fame and the things of the gospel has spread throughout all the churches. And not only this, but he has also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord himself and to show our readiness. Now, verse 20 is key. Taking precaution so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift. For we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. We have sent with them our brother, whom we have often tested and found diligent in many things, and now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. As for Titus, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brethren, they are messengers of the churches, a glory to Christ. Therefore, openly before the churches, show them the proof of your love and our reason of boasting about you. Did you hear that? There must be trust, especially in those who handle the funds. And trust is maintained by accountability and good practices. So we have to be very concerned about ministry integrity. When I was early called into ministry, and you kind of go into that training informally and then formally in seminary, I love it. My ministry mentors really spoke forcefully about the need for care in two areas in your life in ministry. Be careful with your morals and be careful with your money. Be careful with your morals and be careful with God's money. And so you just embrace that early. You know, this is part of the deal. You don't chafe against that. You're not thinking, I shouldn't be having to be accountable to anybody. No, you embrace that. You know that's part of the deal. In fact, in ministry, if other people trust you too much, then you put accountability in. So even if somebody says, well, we don't think we need to put accountability in for you. Well, thank you for that, but we're going to put some accountability in place. I'm not going to let you put me in a situation like that where people might wonder what I'm doing. So let me share this with you. I have never, ever, ever been tempted to steal money. I've been tempted in a lot of ways in my life, but stealing has just not been one of the temptations I've faced. And so I can speak to my integrity that if the church were to do something foolish, if the church were to give me the church checkbook and all rights, if the Constitution, bylaws, and procedures all changed in a reckless way to say, Jim, you write all the checks, you pay the bills, we'd be in trouble in lots of ways just because I'm not up to managing a budget like this. But it wouldn't enter my mind to steal anything. It would never, never, not a penny would be gone. But that's not enough, me saying I have integrity. It would be true, but Paul doesn't do that. He doesn't say, look, I have integrity, just hand the money over to me. I'll take it to Jerusalem. That's all we need to do. I'm Paul. Paul doesn't even do that. Like, Paul is trustworthy. You really could. I think you could have handled every penny to Paul. He'd get it to Jerusalem, give it all away. We know that. It's just not wise to practice that way. So if the church were to say that, we're going to change all the bylaws, we're going to change all the procedures, Jim, we're going to give you all that, I'd say, no, you cannot do that. That's reckless. Don't put me in a situation like that. That would be a horrible thing to do. So blind financial trust is not wise for a church. It's not wise for a ministry. And don't you love it? First century, Paul models that to where the Corinthians don't have to worry about how is it being handled. They just know, will we follow through on what God's told us to do? Because the trust is there, the transparency is there, now we can just get on with the deal of obeying God as he's leading. Verse 20 again, look how critical this is. Let's see it again. Taking precaution so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift, for we have regard for what's honorable, but catch this, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. It's that biblical standard we see in 1 Timothy 3 and also in Titus, being above reproach, being beyond legitimate criticism, not doing questionable things where people are wondering about. So it's not a matter of just having integrity, but carrying out things in such a way that people have confidence that it's being handled well, and Paul does that so well. So how does Paul do that here? If you study the text, you'll notice one thing he does is he operates in a team approach. He did that in all of his ministry, but notice he spells it out here. When it comes to money, Paul said, I'm not going to handle this alone. In fact, it looks like Paul doesn't touch the money at all. Paul talks about it. He casts the vision for it. He appeals that they would help. He's wanting to work with the Corinthians to follow through because of what it means to them and to others. But he's not going to touch it himself. And certainly he's not going to do it alone. He's going to have other people there. Notice he mentions three men here in the text, at least three. So in verse 16, we see he mentions Titus. The Corinthians knew Titus. He had been there on Paul's behalf before. They had talked about the offering before. Titus is bringing this letter to them. So they know Titus, a trusted brother, going to help with the administration of this gift. Secondly, verse 18, he talks about another brother. This brother so well known, they don't even tell his name. It'd be nice for us to know who that was because we weren't living then. But the Corinthians would know who this was. Notice what he says, verse 18. For we've sent along with him, with Titus, the brother whose fame and the things of the gospel has spread through all the churches. And not only this, but he's also been appointed by the churches to travel with us in this gracious work. That's a great guy. That's a guy who has integrity, so much so that the churches who are aware of this offering say, we appoint him. We want this man a part of it. We have so much confidence in him. But not just him. There's a third brother. Verse 22 speaks of him. We have sent with them our brother, whom we've often tested and found diligent in many things, but now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. Three people at least handling the offering. But I love this. Add to that what Paul told them in 1 Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians 16, Paul said, hey, Corinthians, you can actually send one of your own representatives with the offering to Jerusalem. taking any doubt about where this money's going. Look with that. Look at this with me. 1 Corinthians 16:1. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so do you also. On the first day of every week, each of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. And here it is. When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. This is ironclad transparency, a team approach handling this offering. I love that concern for integrity. I love that commitment to being above reproach, especially in the realm of ministry money. And you and I as a church, we've been operating this way for a long time. Since before I arrived here, good procedures here in place. So I'm going to risk boring you a second with about 1 minute talking about procedures. So don't worry. We're not going to have an accounting class. But this should inspire confidence. In the realm of money, don't we want to be bored? We don't want scandal here. So check this out, though. So our offerings are collected and counted and secured by a team. So no one person takes these offerings that we just gave. They're counted and collected by a team and secured. Then our financial secretary will input the data and will process checks to meet our obligations. But our financial secretary can't even sign the checks that she prepares. That's where our treasurer comes in. And our treasurer will see what the request is. Then it's legit. We'll sign the check. We also have a finance team that's involved in this process. We see them at work in the budgeting process, but they also track the financial health of the church. There's a team there. These are people that you and I affirm to have these roles every year. We have a board of directors that gives us another layer of financial oversight to make sure everything we're doing is legal and upright. And then you get reports financially every other month, 6 times a year. If you come to one of our business meetings, you get to see where is the money going, how are we doing financially, and an opportunity to ask questions about procedure anytime you need to. So shockingly, though, in the 21st century, there are churches that put too much blind trust in a single individual. It's unwise. Paul didn't even do that. And so this week, sadly, I read some very interesting accounts of churches who struggled with embezzlement. So at best, in these churches where one person has all the say over the money, you have lots of questions that could be asked. But sadly, time and time again, dozens of accounts of this where somebody actually stole from a church. Can you imagine it? One story is this one. This was out of Troutford, Virginia. Over a 5-year period, a treasurer in the church embezzled almost $100,000, spent money on vacations, meals, and clothing for herself, and now sentenced to 2 years in jail for that. In Alabama, a small church treasurer, this person served for a long time in that role. And this person stole over $200,000 for personal experiences and vacations. And so you understand, in a small country church, it's kind of like that. Like, well, we've known him for years. He's been in the church. He grew up in the church. He was a baby in this church. We know him. He would never do that. And they put blind trust in one individual. It's bad for him. It's bad for the church. And when it comes to light, it's devastating to a church. Just one more example. There are dozens. But a bookkeeper at a large Texas church issued a credit card to herself and got away with it, paying rent, utilities, and restaurant bills, charging it to the church. For 5 years, got away with that until one of the associate pastors found out what was happening and brought it down, and that person's facing severe legal problems because of that. So blind trust with money is never wise, and Paul did model better than that. And so as a church, we enjoy this confidence in the recipients and in the givers, in the ministry that handles it. We enjoy that, and we're motivated to protect that integrity through good processes. So you and I, we approve a budget together as a church. When we do something major like building a building and parking, we do that together. Do we agree that God's leading us to do that? And we say, yeah, we do, and we do that together. Then we then pledge to support those things together. We also put trustworthy men and women in place who will process and handle the resources. And even the money we give away as a ministry, and we give away 10.5% of what comes in, we want to put that in the hands of trusted partners that we also trust. People like the International Mission Board and the North American Mission Board. And when we give to disaster relief, we like doing that through BGR or Send Relief. We like knowing that the money goes where it's supposed to go. So we understand in the ministry and the worship of giving and receiving, recipients must be trusted. Givers need to be trustworthy. Advocates, the ministry holding the funds has to be trustworthy. But let's come here. And the foundation is there has to be confidence in God. Everything is built on that. Your right to trust in God to lead you in your giving. Your right to trust in God to meet your needs as you give to others. And you're right that God should be glorified in your giving. A minister should have as its goal to handle the money well, like Paul models here, so that the believers then can just focus on, should I give or not? Lord, are you prompting me to give to this or not? With the issues of trust kind of already handled through good processes and good transparency. But let's come back to this. Do you trust God in the ministry of giving and generosity? Is that an issue that's holding you back? Like, I would give, but I don't know that if I give, my needs will be taken care of. That's a big hurdle. And maybe you're there this morning. It's a big step of faith when you say, I know it's expensive to live in America, but God, I want to give first. I want to give as you're leading me to give, and so I'm going to make that the first part of my budget. Before I get to other expenses, here's giving first, generosity first. That's what I'm going to do. That's a big step of faith. I heard a young couple share this week, somehow this topic came up, and this young couple said how initially they were afraid to give for that very reason. You know, life's expensive. We got a lot of needs, but then decided to do it, and it was so beautiful to hear them talk about fear, and then in the very next sentence, this is fun. To hear giving described as, we went from fear to fun. Are you there in your giving? Maybe the first move on your way to fun is just, all right, there's peace. I sense you're calling me to give. I see what the Bible says about giving, and I'm going to put that in place in my life. I want to be like this. And the first step is just, you'll feel, okay, it feels good to be obedient. But I pray that you can get to where this young couple did. In short order, they went from fear to, this is actually fun. To trust God, to watch Him provide. That's a good place to be. And let's just remind ourselves, in all this talk of trust, you and I can trust in the Lord. Great place to be. So first of all, this, have you given yourself to the Lord? That's what the Macedonians did. We saw that a few weeks ago. First, give yourself to the Lord. Do you trust the Lord with your life? Before we even talk about money and how God's going to apply that in your life, first, have you said, Lord, I trust you? Nobody's loved you like Jesus. Nobody's given more to you than Jesus. He made you. And He went to the cross for you. He gave His body and blood. He poured it all out for you so that your sins could be forgiven. He was raised from the dead, and He makes this offer. Whoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. You can call on Jesus and be cleansed and be given the gift of everlasting life, a home in heaven, but you have to trust Him. No longer chase your sin. Be tired of your sin and come to Jesus. Put your faith in Him. Have confidence in God. And listen, then follow that. Lord, you're going to be the Lord of everything in my life. I give you my body, my morality has to please you, I give you my money, it's all yours, you possess all of me, but it all begins by trusting in Jesus. Pray with me.